We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is Monday, May 5th. On this date, in 1847, the AMA was organized. 1847, that's a long time ago. Were they still bleeding people with leeches at that point? I don't even know. And Napoleon Bonaparte died where he had been exiled. So two quiz questions here. Where was Napoleon exiled to, audience? That's right, St. Helena, the island of St. Helena. And what year would this be, roughly, that Napoleon would have died? Think. He sold us the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. He caused all kinds of wars in the early 1800s. 1821. Okay. So I want to move on to an issue that involves science, but the Washington Post did an article, it's a week or two ago now, and I didn't get around to spending a segment on this. But basically, the government is revisiting BPA. Right? Now, this is a compound found in many, many plastics. And it's, it's bisphenol A, I think it's called. But the point is, BPA is a chemical in plastics. And it's been linked to breast cancer and prostate cancer, among other things, and certain behavioral disorders, reproductive health problems in laboratory animals, all that stuff. So what's interesting is what it says for science, about science, and how we understand science, how we gain evidence, knowledge, and gain new evidence and change our minds about things, how government moves when it comes to regulation, how governments deal with the scientific evidence, and then how industry deals with it, and what that all shakes out for in terms of our politics. In general, the Republicans would like to see less regulation. That's the mantra you always hear. Get government off people's backs, let business do what it does best. Poison people? No. Make money. And that the Democrats are for this unnecessary or heavy regulation. So this is an example, or it may turn out to be an example, we're not actually sure yet, of the way in which we've bent over backwards for business and may be harming our people. So there have been over 100 published scientists, 100 published studies by scientists that have raised health concerns about BPA. Right now, BPA is huge in all kinds of plastic products. So it is a key ingredient in billions of dollars worth of products. Now, the Food and Drug Administration has deemed that it's safe, all right? But they have based this largely on two specific studies, both of which were funded by an industry trade group. Well, that's one of the worst things you can do, is allow, base your information on only some of the studies that are out there, first of all. But also, a bias creeps in so much depending on who's funding it. And it isn't so much they're being tainted. It's that if the industry's funding those studies, you can bet that the scientists, before they got their money, the scientists said, we don't really think BPA is a problem, but we're willing to look into it. That's the kind of study that industry will fund. And I know this because I served on a study like this when I was in graduate school. And the industry chose to fund the person who was skeptical that there was harm being done. And what a surprise. What happens if you're skeptical there's harm being done? You don't find harm. Now, it's a complicated reason why, but you set your study up in such a way that you may not be giving it the very best test you could, all right? And I'm not saying there's any duplicity going on here. I'm saying people tend to get confirmed in their research what they already believe. So across from these two industry studies, there are hundreds of studies finding problems, okay? And the evidence continues to mount that there's a problem with BPA. And so now, the congressional Democrats are now investigating the industry's influence in the regulation of BPA, and it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. But basically, this is very similar to what the tobacco industry did, okay? The tobacco industry fought the science on cancer for decades. What they claimed was, we can't be certain. We don't have enough information. We must collect more research. We can't prove that cigarettes cause cancer. Yes, there are correlational links here, but that's not proof that it causes cancer. It could be due to some third cause that we don't know. And so you raise the bar on certainty as high as you can and try and stave off regulation. That's what the tobacco industry did. It turns out that there have been memos that have been released since then back and forth within these tobacco companies in which people explicitly made it clear they were using this strategy. If you can delay the regulation, you postpone not only the regulation, but victim compensation, and you continue to make money. So in the long run, it's probably worth it economically to these industries to stonewall, to drag their feet, all of that. Okay. Now, what's interesting is that when we look at the way science has been dealt with over, well, let's just go over my lifetime and maybe over yours, I've always been kind of amazed at how well our government worked in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Particularly the 70s, when whether it was the Nixon administration, Nixon was not hostile to government oversight of things that affected citizens, or it was the Nixon or then the Ford Carter administration, right up until Reagan when the deregulatory fever took hold, we made some amazing strides, despite the fact that industry has billions of dollars and wields power. I was always amazed as a young person, every time the Clean Air Act would be implemented or an improvement to the Clean Water Act or anything that dealt with environmental concerns. You know, we put more species on the endangered species list. We made larger national forests. Whatever it was, I was always kind of amazed because I knew that entrenched interests wanted their way, and yet Congress was acting for the good of the people in general. Now, is it possible for regulations to go too far? Sure. We've all seen the stepladder that says, do not stand on the top step. You have to have that there, or people don't know enough to brace themselves and they want to sue if they fall and say, well, I wasn't warned not to stand on the top step. I agree that all of that is nuts, and I agree that we're a litigious society. People don't take personal responsibility, and so they spill coffee on themselves and they say, oh, I should sue McDonald's or whatever it is they do. So I'm in agreement at one level that there's too many lawsuits and too much regulation at times. On the other hand, left to Congress or Republican Congress or left to industry to say, how much regulation do you want? They're not going to choose any regulation. They are not going to choose to have oversight. And yet, as organizations get larger, we've got issues we have to deal with and we have to protect people. So when you think about the size of government and the burden of government and smaller government, as Republicans say they want, let's make sure we deal with a couple of issues here. There's a couple of dimensions to this argument about the size of government. All right? One is just financially. What does it cost us to run the government? And to the extent that such a huge percentage is in entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, and they're going to get larger, retirement benefits for government employees and military employees, all of that. To the extent that that stuff, particularly Medicare, in the relatively short term and a little bit longer term, Social Security, the fact that those will be a huge percentage of the budget. If we talk smaller government, if you want to talk about curbing entitlements, then let's talk about curbing or containing entitlements. John McCain says that he wishes to increase the tax cuts that we've got or extend the Bush tax cuts and have some others, but he's not saying how he's going to pay for it except to say he wants to cut the budget elsewhere. Well, there's only a couple places. There's some discretionary spending outside the military budget, and McCain would never cut the military budget, but mostly the money to be cut is in the entitlements. So he could make a decision that he wants to cut entitlements. Let's have that conversation. Or he could be saying, I wish to cut, you know, the discretionary programs, the other programs that are out there. And that's a wide range of things we spend on research and infrastructure, all of it. So the issue when it comes to smaller government, one issue is, okay, is it the amount of money we're spending? If so, the best way to go after that is to cut entitlements. If it's cut the size of government, that we don't need all this regulation, we need to unleash the powers of business, let's remind people of a couple of little fiascos that cost us a great deal of money. You know, everybody always says, oh, it'll cost too much money. The Bush administration used that argument, has been using it for 7 years, about global warming, that we can't afford, without better information, to cost the industry so much money. But they never tell you how much that is, do they? No, they do not. And so you're left with this, this feeling that it really doesn't make a lot of sense to have to argue about numbers when they don't give you the numbers. For example, if you go back to the 80s, right? We got a lot of good laws passed in the 60s, 70s, and into the beginning of the 80s, such as the clean air, clean water, all the stuff we've talked about, environmental law, a whole variety of OSHA, whole variety of things to make things safer. It could be coal mining, factory, a whole variety of things. Consumer product safety stuff, federal drug, FDA stuff, drug administration stuff, all of that. And we get to the 80s, and there's deregulation fever during the Reagan years. And so they said, you know, we don't need all this regulation. Let's stop. Let's look carefully. Let's sunset these regulations so they don't live on forever, et cetera. Well, what was the biggest cost to us in the 80s? The biggest cost to the taxpayers in the 1980s was the savings and loan scandal. Okay? Basically, what happened was government took its eye off of the savings and loan industry. They were allowed to make loans that weren't ever going to be good loans, but they were backed by the federal government. So we ended up paying, and that is the American citizens ended up ponying up about $500 billion, $500 billion, to cover the expenses of other people, people in business, people in banking, who didn't pay enough attention because they didn't have to. They knew they were backed by the federal government, and the regulation wasn't good enough to keep them from wasting $500 billion, which we then picked up. That's an example of, it would have been nice to have the right regulation at the time. Look at the subprime loan mess right now, right? The Bush administration in the aughts here, the last 7 years, has been pushing a couple of things. One is Bush said we must have more home ownership, and that's a good goal in general, but he pushed on that, and the administration pushed on this notion of new financial instruments, and basically not having oversight of these new financial instruments. So we end up with not regulating this industry, and we get caught holding the bag. We've already bailed out Bear Stearns for $30 billion. It'll be interesting to see how much else we bail out, but people are hurting because government didn't do its job. And this brings me to a philosophical point that I want to take up when we come back, and that is relative to the whole issue of whether or not people need protecting or whether they can be out there on their own.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays from 11 to midnight. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
How true. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is May 5th. On this date, it's the birthday of Annette Bening, Michael Palin. And in case you don't remember, Michael Palin was a member of Monty Python. And Soren Kierkegaard. Soren Kierkegaard was not a member of Monty Python. Let's go back to science and the BPA and government regulation stuff. So I've strayed a little bit from BPA to government regulation, but let's go back to this fundamental issue of oversight. And I think people say, yes, industries need some oversight. But the argument you often hear from Republicans is that we're treating our people like children, that we don't treat them as adults when we try and overprotect them. For example, if there are restrictions on children's advertising or advertising aimed at children, or restrictions on what people can do or can't do, you often hear from conservatives, oh, come on, people have to be personally responsible. You should be able to advertise, you know, whatever it is you advertise, I don't know, maybe cigarettes, maybe alcohol, and people make their mature decision, or we shouldn't be trying to protect people from every little thing. Well, let's stop and address this for a minute, because there's an argument to be made on the other side. I do understand that argument, and in general, I'm in agreement that we have to take personal responsibility. But there's a couple of things to keep in mind here. One is that persuasion is a very powerful technique, right? And there are people who study it. Now, I'm a psychologist by training. We know a bit about persuasion. I'm a communication person. I've taught in communication departments for over 20 years. And communication knows a lot about persuasion. But the people that really pay attention to persuasion, scientists know how it works and what circumstances it works under. The people that really pay attention are salespeople and Madison Avenue advertisers, PR people, and they really know how to push people's buttons, whether it's in advertising or it's in door-to-door sales or it's just in, you know, an ad on the web or on eBay or wherever. And so we don't actually train our people, that is citizens, to deal with these categories of persuasion or these types of persuasion. And so you can say that, oh, people just have to be smart enough. You know, this, there's nothing unfair about this. We don't need government regulation. But in fact, we have set up this very sophisticated communication environment with radio and television and cable and internet and all of this. And there's some very sophisticated persuasion techniques being used on people, on millions of people. And if there isn't some kind of a watchdog, people get taken advantage of. You can't possibly, as an individual citizen, keep up with all the persuasion techniques. There are people out there trying to manipulate you. And what people are saying is, yes, if you want, if we've got industries that invest billions and billions in manipulating people, they're free to do that because it's America. But we shouldn't be talking about any special techniques or education or intervention to try and educate people of what, how they're being manipulated. And that's just one example, because the general issue of government regulation goes much deeper than whether or not there are going to be rules about whether you can advertise to children directly. You know, should we be making persuasive appeals to young children? But it goes beyond that. Of course, it goes well beyond that. Chemical regulation of chemical industries, regulation in every environment. The question becomes, at what point does government look out for its citizens, and at what point do you just allow business or the free enterprise system to, you know, do its thing and not worry much about it? So this issue of oversight and how we protect people has been at the forefront here for, you know, much of my lifetime. And what happens is we get a Democratic administration in, and the feeling is let's have rules that continue to protect people, and let's promulgate more rules that help protect people. And I do get that there's a downside to that, but it's not clear to me we've erred so far on the other side. I mean, if you listen to right-wing talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh, what we find is that, you know, the way he talks is that environmentalists are all wackos, that there was never anything good that came out of the environment. Now, when you pin him down, he backs off and says, well, no, we cleaned up the air and the water, but now we're done. It doesn't quite work that way. Let me bring in another issue here, and that's the size of and scale of things. The size of corporate giants today mean that the government has to be big enough to deal with them. If you go back to the founding fathers, there were no corporations. If the founding fathers dealt with commercial interests in any way, they dealt with individuals and families that ran a business. But there were no large corporations. No, there were shipping companies, and there was the beginning of corporations or companies, but they were companies, not corporations. And they tended to be run by one family. We weren't talking shareholders. Now we've got multi-billion dollar corporations that have tremendous reach and tremendous assets. And for us to think, oh, well, let's shrink the government really small. No, the government has to be big because it's got to stand up to, it's got to be able to function and deal in this environment of organizations that includes corporations that have hundreds of lawyers and accountants, just all kinds of things. So back to the issue of regulation. What appears to have happened here with BPA in recent years is that the industry has had too big a say in the non-regulation of it. And they said, oh, it's perfectly safe, don't worry about it. What they found in these hundreds of studies they've done is that there are risks for cancer and exposure to this BPA in everything from baby bottles to plastic soda bottles, to milk cartons, milk bottles, plastic milk bottles, gallon milk jugs, all kinds of things. Many types of plastic have BPA in it. And it's less harmful when you just have it near you, like a baby sucking on a rattle that has BPA in it isn't going to get particularly sick. But when you're drinking liquids that are in bottles, stored in bottles, that have BPA in the plastic, we've got a bigger problem, apparently. So that's what the studies are showing. Anyway, I don't have a solution for it here. I just want to caution my readers that, look, the Bush administration has been anti-science, and that's going to go down as one of their legacies. I mean, the Iraq War is their big legacy. Okay, Bush's tax cuts are his second legacy because he's deprived the government of the revenue they needed to balance the budget. So he's sending us into a very perilous time with huge deficits after we had gotten rid of the deficits. All right, that's his second legacy. Iraq's the first. But really, if I want to put my finger on the third legacy, it's the anti-science bent that has infected this administration. And these things always start with the top, you know. The president has come out and said that he thought evolution should be taught creationism or intelligent design should be taught side of evolution. Well, we've covered before on this show why that doesn't make any sense and why it's a shockingly ignorant statement
to make, notwithstanding the fact that we have a large percentage of the country that also thinks the same way, that doesn't make it right. The president should know better. I think he knows better, but I'm not positive, because he isn't very curious. He may not understand how science works. But during his administration, whether it's the anti-science bias, it's a pro-religion anti-science bias, or it is simply economics, and the less regulation you have, the better it is for business. If that's his only attitude or stake in this here, it doesn't really matter, because what he's done is systematically ignored research. So the global warming issue is one, and I won't go into it, but there's a long paper trail of how the Bush administration has ignored the research on global warming. Let's move on to a few others, and I don't actually have a list in front of me, so I'm going to have to see what I remember from this. But the BPA issue we're talking about today is one. Another one is endangered species. They have slowed down on naming endangered species because it, quote, harms industry, I guess they would say. And so they just try and raise doubts about the scientists that say it's a problem. This is less science and more statistics and sociology, but the which organization was it? The Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department said that the statistical tests were showing that minorities were having trouble voting and a variety of things related there, and they don't buy the statistics. So to the extent that statistics are science or the application of the scientific method, some of its methodological tools, the Bush administration has resisted statistical evidence in a number of areas. There's a long list of areas of science that they've ignored, and I'm having trouble coming up with them right now. So I will maybe after the break have a few. But let's just summarize by saying that the Bush administration has had a war on science. Rather than accept what experts in government and universities say about who have studied these problems in depth and are publishing in the relevant literature, so they're being critiqued by their peers, rather than accept what they say, political appointees in these agencies, EPA, a variety of different agencies, have stepped in and said, no, you know, we don't think this is right. We're going to look at it. They reversed the decision of the experts. Just somebody that's, you know, 4 years out of law school is working for the Bush administration and contradicting scientists who've spent, you know, a good part of their lives studying these issues. So I don't have to say too much more about this. I guess what we'll do is take a break on the Andy Finn Show. And when we come back, we're going to talk a couple of the issues that are hot in the election. This is the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio in Fairfax County.